Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. Before we get to my guest, a couple of things. Please, when you get a second, go to iTunes. Leave us some nice comments. That always helps to have some good vibes out there. And please send the links around to the podcast. Get your friends and family involved. All they have to do is go to iTunes, Paul Mercurio Show. Click on the subscribe button, put their email address in, and they're going to get a new podcast every Monday like you do. My sponsor, deepdiscount.com, they've always been great. They help support this podcast, which allows me to bring it to you. They've got amazing holiday deals going on right now through the holidays. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo right there on my homepage. It'll take you there. Right now, they've got this really cool live release documentary, David Bowie's legendary performance on June 25th at the Glastonbury 2000 Festival. My brother is a huge Bowie fan. I got him this as a gift for Christmas. Don't tell him and ruin it. You know how you are with your big mouth, all right? There's really cool stuff. You've got thousands and thousands of TV shows, old, new, movies, swag. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo, okay? And it will take you there to get all sorts of great buys for the holiday season. The new release this week is The Nun. This is a really intense but very, very cool movie. It's about a young nun at a cloistered abbey in Romania, takes her own life, and a priest, along with a novitiate on the threshold of her final vows, are sent to by the Vatican to investigate. It's a really cool, intense film. I watched it a couple of days ago. Pick it up. It's for a great price. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the logo for deepdiscount.com. It'll take you there. You're going to see all sorts of great deals. Pick up The Nun. Pick up the Bowie thing that I got. And be a hero to all your family. All right? And my guest this week, the great comedic talent, Robert Townsend. Really cool conversation with him. You're going to enjoy that. And leave some comments on iTunes. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Welcome, first-timers. Very excited to have on as my guest this week somebody that I've really admired, not just as a comedic talent and genius, but just someone that is very socially and politically conscious and uses his art to sort of advance society. You know him from his one of his great films, Hollywood Shuffle. He starred in A Soldier Story. He directed Eddie Murphy's Raw special, and has a lot of accolades for his film The Five Heartbeats, which came out in 1991. And now his current project is The Making of The Five Heartbeats, which kind of chronicles the sort of how that film that focused on the sort of the bands of the groups of the 60s and the African-American artists of the 60s, how that came about. Robert Townsend, you have so many things to say about you, like the whole interview is going to be your intro.
I'm done.
That's it.
Great to be on the show.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. It's great to be on with you, man. I really, really big admirer of you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. I mean, you... I want to talk about the project that you have out now in a minute, but you know, you kind of got your start. We were talking off air a little bit at the Improv in New York City over on, well, I guess it was on West 44th. And that was when Bud and Silver Friedman ran that room. And that was that you were there in the days of some of the big names that came out of there, like Carlin and Robert Klein.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, that was the spot to be. When I was a young comedian, Jay Leno was the host. Robin Williams would come in. Rodney Dangerfield would come in. Billy Crystal was there. Robert Klein. And online, I meet this young comedian, you know, because, you know, I was the only brother there. And then Keenan Ivory Wayans was online with me. And we started to work out at the Improv. And everybody, Andy Kaufman, Gilbert Gottfried. So it was like, you know, it was kind of like a who's who, Jerry Seinfeld. Everybody was in that room, and it was amazing, now that I think about it, to be a part of that time at the Improv. And Bud Friedman had just gone through a divorce, and so Silver had taken over.
Yeah, I remember Silver.
And, Yeah, and so those were some of the best, oh my God, some of the best days of my life, because, you know, you get, I think you got $10 and you got a meal and you would get to eat and you get $10.
Yeah, and you hang out at that bar, and I remember Silver, and Silver passed me, and this was after you were there. I'd never met you, but I knew of you, but there were some nights you'd walk in and some of the people you just named are just hanging out at the bar, and you're like, and you start kind of freeze as a young comic of like, I want to go over and say something, but I don't want to be a douchebag. Like, you don't know what to do. And Leno was actually someone who helped me get my start, because I was a lawyer and a banker on Wall Street, and I started writing, making short films, and met him and gave him some jokes that he could have, and he ended up buying some jokes for The Tonight Show and got me started. Yeah, he was really cool. He took the jokes and called me. It was funny, like, he called me like 3 days later. And he's like, it's Jay Leno, it's Paul there. And I thought it was my friend David who was like pranking me. So I go, really funny, David. He goes, no, it's really Jay Leno. And I actually said to Jay Leno, you do a lousy Jay Leno. And he,
Oh my God.
And I'm like, I'm never going to work in this business ever. And that helped me get my start. But anyway, this isn't about me. But it's funny because not a lot of people know about Silver, but that's the woman. Because I think Bud was more of like the business side of it, and she was more the artistic eye, so to speak. And she was at the epicenter of amazing talent like yourselves and everybody else you mentioned in the heyday of that club, when that was like the club in the country.
Oh my, I mean, no, I got to tell you, the improv, because when I think about it now, and like to say, we were all in that room together, and I just remember when Robin Williams would go on, you know, like, and he had gotten Mork and Mindy, but he was flying back to both coasts, and he would come in, the only thing is that, like Bud would come over sometime and goes, Robin wants to do 5 minutes before you, he wants to do five, and that's all it's going to be. And then, you know, I needed my $10. And I go like, oh, okay. He'd do 2 hours.
Yeah.
He'd do 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then he gets off stage and then everybody leaves the club.
Exactly. Exactly. That still happens at the Comedy Cellar now in New York. Like, you're on and then somebody waltzes in like Chris Rock and everybody's like, it used to be like when you're a younger comic, you're like, oh my God, it's Chris Rock. Now it's like, if this son of a bitch goes before me, I'm going to choke somebody. Like, you just want to get out of there, you know? And
yeah, No. I was in New York City. I'll tell you a funny story. I was at the Improv in New York City, and I come into the bar, and everybody's huddled around the television at the bar, and I was on Next, and so I'm like, you know, what's going on? And then Next says, oh, man, did you hear the news? And then it's like, you know, John Lennon just, you know, got killed. And so then the MC was standing next to me, and I said, oh, man, wow, that's crazy. So then he goes on stage, goes, ladies and gentlemen, John Lennon was just killed, and please welcome Robert.
Jesus.
And I just remember, like, going, you ever notice?
Boy, tuna fish has gotten expensive, huh? Like, yeah. Oh my God!
I just remember, I bombed so hard that night because the audience was like, "Oh!" And I was like, "Well, you know,
yeah,
Beatles.
Yeah, you know, they were pretty good for their day." Oh, that's so funny. But from reading about you a bit, you as a kid were doing voices and would go into and you know incorporate that into stuff that you were doing in school. And where did that come from? Did you have particular influences when you were really young? And what was it about slipping in and out of those voices that really connected with you?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, I grew up in a really rough neighborhood on the west side of Chicago, and you know, so I would have to run home from school. And when I ran home, I would run right in the house, and all I did was watch television. So they nicknamed me TV Guy because I knew everything about television. When I was a kid, I could do literally 60 voices. I mean, I could do Walter Britt. Well, damn it, don't read this shit. You know, I could do The Wizard of Oz, you know, The Scarecrow. I've never gotten my place if it wasn't for you. I could do Hitchcock. But these days, I never watch your TV. You know, I could do any character. I could still, you know, I mean, you know, like if I need to be an old man, you know, like sometimes when they would call me when my credit cards were crazy, I'd play like I'm an old man. Well, I
that's awesome.
And I would drive them crazy, and then they, or either I'd play the stupid homeboy, you know, like I'd go like, you know, I'm working at the Fry's right now, and they give me a raise. You know, but Charlie don't want to give me the money because him and Keisha, they in the back room, they getting it on. And I would talk like that, and then the credit card people, the school loan people would go like, just get it to us when you can. I've had characters in my head. You know, I've been working on a one-man show about my life, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah? And what do you have? When does is that sort of become? Is that is I would love to see that. Is that premiering anytime in the next year or so? Or what's the plan for that?
I did it in New York at a theater in the Village, and now I'm going to do it at a theater out here in Los Angeles. I mean, right now my focus is really on the documentary.
Yeah.
Because I mean, last night we had the premiere, and we're you know I got 2 weeks, 1 week out here, you know, at the Limley. NoHo in North Hollywood for 7 days starting on Friday, and it'll play from November 30th through December 6th, and then I go to the Maisel Theater in New York, you know, from the 7th until the 13th, and, you know, we're just trying to, you know, I think the documentary is really good. People have said already it potentially could have some Oscar buzz around it, and so I'm excited. So right now it's a documentary, and then I think in February I'm going to hit the stage again with my one-man show.
Wow. And so let's talk about the documentary and then the genesis of the documentary, which is the making of the Five Heartbeats, which is tell people a little bit, sort of give them some background and backfiller on that, sort of just behind that movie and what inspired you to do it, because it's a really interesting look into that period of time in music and America.
Well, I'll just tell you how it really started. When I was a little kid in 1968, on the radio, they announced that the Temptations were breaking up and David Ruffin was leaving the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm this little kid on the west side of Chicago in this rough neighborhood, and that music fueled my soul and made me feel, you know, just good when you were, you know, going through struggles. And I was like, why did they break up? What happened? Why did it? I wanted to call David Ruffin. Y'all good, man. Don't break up. And I didn't understand. I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So it always stayed with me. And so after Hollywood Shuffle, I say to Keenan, who wrote Hollywood Shuffle with me, I said, Keenan, why don't we do a story about a group like the Temptations and what happened? And that became the idea for the Five Heartbeats. The Five Heartbeats, what people don't know, is that the movie bombed at the box office. It's about the singing group. People love the movie, but we bombed.
Mm.
Now, on social media, over 300 million clips have been shared worldwide.
Wow.
So people are always asking me, can you do another sequel to The Five Heartbeats? How did you make The Five Heartbeats? You know, how did you come up with it? And so then I decided to do a documentary, and the documentary is kind of like a journey of an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the ups and downs. It's like for anybody that's a dreamer that said, hey, can I do it? You see me struggling. It's my second movie. I went from Hollywood Shuffle that was like $100,000 to $8.6 million.
Wow.
And you see me, you know, win and lose. And it's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
A Hollywood story.
Yeah.
So that's why I did the documentary.
You know, loosely, the Five Heartbeats, the film itself was based loosely, from what I understand, on the Dells, the Temptations, Wilson Pickett, the Four Tops, et cetera, et cetera. Sam Cooke, was there sort of a, you know, and addresses racism in that period and what the struggles that the African-American, you know, which I can only imagine just hard enough to be an artist or a musician or a comedian just in general, but then to deal with racism on top of that, I can't even imagine. But was there a commonality of issues or problems, not just that they had to deal with, but like self-destructive behavior? Like, was there anything sort of that you saw as a through line or a spine with all of those groups of that era that you wanted to get across in the film?
The racism they did have to deal with, you know, I mean, that was something. Like the Dells told me that they couldn't be on their own album cover because the record label said their faces would be offensive to white people.
So
they put a white couple on the front of their album cover, and they got to put into a little square in the back. And so, and they shared with me, like, you know, all the groups said when they travel through the South in different areas, they get pulled over by the police, and then the police say, oh, I see on the side you're the Temptations, or you're, you know, the Four Tops, or, you know what, sing something, you know, sing your love song, you know, and then they would make them sing in the middle of nowhere with their hands on the hood of their station wagon and, you know, degrade them.
If you're
going to say, just my imagination running away with me, and they got to do that in the middle of the night, you know.
On a street. Yeah.
On a street.
Yeah.
You know, so the Five Heartbeats deals with, you know, all the stuff that, you know, the groups were going through in the 60s while they were creating this amazing music.
Do you, you know, there's definitely, I mentioned at the top, you know, sort of this idea that you take stands, you have points of view and what you do, and you made Hollywood Shuffle, which, by the way, you did on credit cards. The credit cards you were referencing earlier when you were doing those voices was that, right? Like, that was just like you just decided to go out and make this thing because you couldn't get any financing, right?
Right. I mean, the story behind Hollywood Shuffle was that because of all the negative, you know, roles that I was auditioning for, I finally got cast in a great movie called A Soldier Story, directed by Norman Jewison.
Yeah.
And it was me, Denzel Washington, David Alan Grier, and Howard Rollins. And I told my agent, I said, I want to do more movies like that. And she says, Robert, they only do one black movie a year. You did it, be happy.
Mm.
And I decided to make my own movie. I said, rather than, I'm not going to wait another 2 years to do a movie.
Right.
And so,
well, you could try to turn yourself white. You could have tried that, but that probably would have been harder than making another movie.
a reverse Al Jolson.
There you go.
But you know, the only thing that I would say is that I decided to make my own movie, and I had $60,000 in the bank, and I went through that $60,000 because I didn't know what I was doing, and then I had to finish the film, and then that's when I got every credit card I could get my hands on.
Hmm.
I said, I'll charge the movie. I'll figure it out.
Hmm.
And that's what I did, and the movie came out really good, but when people said, how did you make the movie again? And I told the story, and that's amazing that you could get all these credit cards and, you know, finance the movie on credit. And
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I figured it out.
Yeah, man.
It became the hook to the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it's funny because I'm doing a one-man off-Broadway show right now, and I had to do a little bit of that myself. You know, you tap into your savings because, you know, you have some backers or whatever, but, like, you got to be all in, you know, and just sort of...
Are you doing the show now?
I am in New York, yeah, at the Actors Temple Theater over on 47th Street. And
oh, man, when I get to New York, I want to come. Are you performing in the next week?
Yeah, I am, yeah. I would love to have you come.
You've got to send me all your information. I'm going to come and see you, man.
Yeah. It's called Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio, and it's a completely audience, improvisational, audience interactive, immersive show where I bring audience members on stage randomly, and they tell stories from their lives. It was born out of my stand-up and sort of my love of talking to people, and I'm on the road around the country or in the city here, and I'm like getting these amazing stories, and somebody saw me do it, and they're like, we think that could be a theater show. So, that's what we did. We put a show together. We got a really cool set that was designed by the set designer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, because I work on that show. I used to work on The Daily Show. I was a writer and performer on that show and The Colbert Report. And it's got a message, a little bit of a message. Like,
I'm coming to see you. I get to New York on Saturday. I'll be there, so I'm coming to see your show.
All right, man. We'll talk off air a little bit, and I'll give you more details on it. But that'd be awesome. I'd be so honored. And, you know, and if you don't like it, then just get out. Just walk out and don't say anything, please. No. Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Can you just stay to the end? I only got 5 more minutes, man. How is it? You directed Eddie Murphy's Raw, and I've always wondered, you know, I've done a special, a couple of specials, but, like, when you're directing somebody of that talent, you know, similar and equal to yours, but, you know, he's an established guy as opposed to a newer comic, what is your role as a director on that? Are you giving him input on material, or are you sort of more just helping him tell the story? Like, what is that?
Well, you know, I was directing. Keenan was one of the producers, and Eddie was producing and starring.
Mm.
And you got three, you know, comedy minds mining the jokes.
Yeah.
We all look at the material and say, hey, there's another gag here. Hey, that could be bigger. Be a little bit more physical.
Mm.
Hey, you know, what if you added another line on top of that line? So when you look at Raw, it is all Eddie Murphy, but then, you know, there's little touches and little tweaks to go a little bit harder.
Yeah.
So we went on the road for like 6 months just watching him, and I was like, oh, okay, I need a wide shot here, I need a close-up there, but hey, what about if we added this Eddie? And so it was that kind of stuff, because not that we can say, hey, you know, Eddie wrote the bits, but can we improve the bits, and can we give a little tweak here and a little tweak there? That's what we did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think, you know, it was Raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the one where he told, he would do Bill Cosby, and like, was it him or was it Pryor that said to have some Jello and shut the fuck up, or who was the person? Was that Pryor or was that Eddie?
That was Eddie. That was in Raw.
That was in Raw. Okay, right. Did you?
You cannot say. That's funny.
Right.
That he does Raw. And no, I mean.
Did you get pushback from? Did you guys get pushback from Cosby, like behind the scenes or anything like over that, or was he like?
I mean, you know, the thing that because Richard Pryor and Eddie were hanging out, and I think Cosby did call Eddie and say, "Hey, you're going too far with the comedy, and you should be clean."
Mm.
And he called Richard, and Richard, you know, basically said, "You know, fuck him."
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Richard Pryor, I loved him, man. He was just crazy.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah, I mean, he signed me to my first deal. When I got to L.A. and I started doing stand-up comedy, he had a deal with Columbia Pictures, and his company was called Indigo.
Mm.
And he signed me to my first deal, came to the Improv to watch me work, and I was doing my Shakespeare routine. I used to do a routine about Black Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, it's this. You know, I wish I could do the Shakespeare. And, you know, he was, I mean, we used to go see him. Me, Arsenio, and Keenan would, you know, go to the Comedy Store when watch Richard, you know, work on his new material.
Mm.
And he would hit the stage, and he had no material. He would just, how you doing? And so, man, I'm just drinking water, you know. And he would just be talking. It was like nothing. And then 8 weeks later, it would be brilliant.
Really? You know, Leno told me that nobody wanted to follow him at the store because he would kill. And Leno said, I would follow him. And I said, why? He said, because then I knew if I had really good jokes. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, if I have to follow him and two of my, I don't know, 10 minutes does really well after Richard, I know those 2 minutes are gold and they're going to crush. And that was sort of his barometer. And he like put himself in those positions of having to follow Pryor. He said Pryor was just a monster. Like he would just, you know, he's a beast, you know? And,
I mean, well, the whole thing is that when you have comedians that, you know, like I remember following Robin Williams and Rodney Dangerfield and, you know, one night, man, Andy Kaufman had the whole audience literally crying. He talked about how he was going to leave Taxi, and he was like, you know, and normally when Andy would come into the Improv, he was always in character. He never like really, you never heard his real voice. He'd go, thank you very much, how you doing, hey, come here, how you doing? And this one night he had everybody crying. He says, and he was in his regular voice, he was on stage. I come in the back of the Improv and he goes, I just got to tell you, you know, my kids are being bullied at school. They said their father is a jerk and people are laughing because I'm a fool. I'm going to leave the show, and I just don't want to do this to my kids anymore because I'm, you know, I feel like, you know, it's my career, but I'm humiliating them, and you know they're going through it, and I'm going to use all my money. NBC is going to sue me, but I'm still going to do everything I can so I can protect my kids. And he says, "Would you help me? You know, I'm just trying to raise the fund. Anything you can give me." And he passed a hat around, and people put all this money.
Jesus.
I went over to Bud Friedman, and I said, this poor guy. I said, oh, my God, this poor guy. And then Bud looks at me, and he says, Andy doesn't have any kids.
It's performance art, man. It's performance art. It's incredible. Yeah, I gotta tell you, man. When you look at sort of where we are in our culture and where race is, especially now in this environment and what the politics of the country is, and you've been so steeped, you've probably experienced it in Hollywood. You talked about, you know, your agent saying there's only one black film made a year. You've addressed it a lot in your career through Hollywood Shuffle, among others, and this movie that the documentary is about. Do you feel like we've made any significant advances in race relations in this country? From your perspective, given how, you know, steeped you've been in that issue?
Well, I mean, we have, and then now we're going backwards.
Yeah.
All the stuff that's happening in Washington right now, we're going backwards. I mean, I you know, it's a scary time right now. Mm-hmm. Scary time because I think, you know, we need comedians more than ever to kind of diffuse it with laughter, because I think, you know, it's like in King Lear, the fool is the wise man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, you know, Stewart or Colbert, you know, it's like we need those voices that can take jabs and make us laugh, because when you really pull back the curtain, you know, a lot of stuff going on right now is taking us backwards with all the immigration stuff.
Mm.
You know, the Charlottesville March and tiki torches and all of that. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, you know, it affects everybody because people start to feel empowered, and then, you know, they don't have any respect for people of color or religion or anything, and that's a sad time in America.
Yeah. Hey, in making of the Five Heartbeats, when you revisit something, when you step away from it, you look at it through different glasses and all of that. Were there moments where you go, man, I can't believe we did that, or we pulled that off, or if I could do it differently, I would do this part differently? Like, how did any of that hit you that way?
You know what, when I was making the documentary, I got to tell you, I look at a lot of things through a different lens, definitely, and I was really happy, you know. I mean, it's like when you're young, like I saw close to 10,000 actors to be in the movie. I had open calls.
You auditioned close to 10,000 actors?
Yes, sir.
Wow, you're...
I would just meet them and I'd talk to them, and then I'd say, hey, can you sing something? Sing something for me. Hey, do a monologue right here. I want you to pretend like you're in the singing group and you just got kicked out, you know? And then I saw them at a theater in New York, and then the Regal Theater in Chicago, the church on Franklin in Hollywood, and I saw all these actors. And then in the documentary, you'll see some of the actors that are big stars now on television and in movies that came and were online to audition.
Wow, that's amazing. It really helps you, you know, because I've done that too. I've created some things that I've produced and directed and auditioned people. It really helps you as an actor when you have to sit on that other side of the table, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you understand what they're going through.
Yeah.
You really understand. And then you can say, like, hey, I can tell you're a little nervous, you know, throw it away right now.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Just relax.
Yeah.
You know? Or, hey, you're doing really good. You know, give me a little bit more. Hey, you know, and, you know, like, it's like when you are a writer, director, and a performer, you just have appreciation from all sides.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it helps you as the actor too. By the way, I love your story of going into school and doing the voices and stuff. I remember like watching Rodney Dangerfield. I would beg my parents to stay up and watch the Tonight Show, and then I would go in and I would do the jokes of the comedian. You know, I'd stand in the locker room and do that, and I was like, man, this is pretty cool. But I didn't have a plan to be a comedian. It just sort of fell into it. But I relate. I think that there's something that happens to us, and it's in your DNA before you can even realize that it's there, right? Like, I really believe that.
Yeah. I mean, well, I know for me, is that I was a class clown, but I was a sophisticated class clown because I could make the teacher laugh.
Yeah.
Make the teacher laugh, and the teacher would be like, oh, my God, this guy's crazy. You know, and then the students would be like, what the hell? He took that science joke and, you know, he took that science, you know, test.
Right.
And he flipped it upside down because I would just think like that. And I studied television, so I studied, you know, the best. When I look at, you know, all those classic I Love Lucy, all those sitcoms, those were really funny shows, the Beverly Hillbillies, all of those.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for me, you know, there's nothing like getting a live response from an audience. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, I know. It really is. And even when you're feeling, you know, and when you're away from it for a while, you're like, man, I'm kind of jonesing for that. Like, it's an interest, like, you think, you take a break, and the break lasts maybe 2 days, and you're back at it again. It's unbelievable. Hey, listen, this is great, man. I hope we can see each other when you come to New York. The film is Making the Five Heartbeats. It is out now. It's got a good shot at getting some Oscar buzz, it sounds like. I'm hoping the best for you, man. It sounds like a great project. And if you haven't seen, out there, people out there listening, the making of the Five Heartbeats itself, the actual movie, watch it. It's a great movie, and watch a lot of other Robert stuff. He's a tremendous artist, and really, really love having you on. If there's anything else you want to plug or tell people about, please feel free, man. But it's great to have you on.
No, man, I just want people to come. Like I said, I'm in New York the 7th through the 13th at the Maisel Theater. The Maisel, up in Harlem, and 1 week Making the Five Heartbeats. So I just want people to come up and support it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'll definitely come up if I get a free ticket. You know, I'm a starving comedian here, you know what I'm saying?
I'll get you a ticket. I think we can make that happen. Take it in time, dude.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you on. Robert Townsend, everybody.
All right, there you go. Robert Townsend, how cool is he? Also, don't forget, my one-man show, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak, is still running at the Actors Temple Theater in New York City, and you can go to telecharge.com for tickets. Use the code PMFAN. That's PMFAN. You get 50% off. And please leave some comments on iTunes. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody, and we'll see you next week.